Hello there, lovely souls. I want to invite you to join me for a special webinar where we'll explore the powerful emotion of shame. Now, shame can hold us back in the cycle of addiction, especially when it comes to sex and love addiction. So join Eric and I as we guide you in understanding how shame impacts your relationships and blocks your growth, and learn the ways to empower yourself to break free from its grip and become the person you aspire to be. This is your opportunity to make a profound transformation. So visit theaddictedmind.com/shame, take a leap of faith, and reserve your spot. You won't regret it. And I look forward to seeing you on the webinar.
It's Patricia Karpus, host of Untangle, the award-winning podcast that covers topics like optimizing brain health, finding your purpose, how to sleep better, harnessing the power of anxiety, successfully changing habits, finding more happiness and joy, and overall, all the many ways to live your best life. If you enjoy hearing from thought leaders, neuroscientists, psychologists, nutritionists, business leaders, and more, join us wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Addicted Mind podcast. My name is Dwayne Osterlin, and I'm your host, and we are on to another episode. Today, our guest is Sophie Agdami. She is a recovery coach in Australia. She shares her own recovery story from alcohol and shares how a particular parable helped change her whole perspective on recovery and helped her find success, healing, and creating a life that she thrives in. I really enjoyed talking with Sophie, and I hope you enjoy the conversation as well. All right, everyone, let's start this episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Addicted Mind. My guest today is Sophie Agdami, and she is going to introduce herself. Why don't you go ahead, Sophie? We've already been talking a little bit about what we're going to talk about, and I'm excited about it. But you start introducing yourself.
Sure. Hi, Dwayne. I'm really happy to be here. I'm Sophie. I live about an hour outside of Melbourne, just near the Great Ocean Road. So it's morning here. So yeah, I live here with my dog, Echo. We moved here about just over 2 years ago from Europe. I grew up in Switzerland and then wow. In the UK. And I've got family in LA, Spain, Switzerland, England.
So all over the world.
Yeah. And I made the move here just over 2 years ago.
Awesome. Great. So let's just jump right in. I want to hear about your story because you're an addiction recovery coach. And I like to hear people's stories of recovery and how they kind of find their way through it. So Let's start there.
Sure. So my drinking started probably early teens. In the UK, it's a very cultural thing to start drinking very early, or at least be, you know, around it a lot. So that's where it really started for me. And it just became the norm, you know, school discos, right, or hanging out with friends. It became very normal. And I also had a job in a pub, which probably helped that career.
Right. You know, so here you are around it all the time. And
exactly. For you. And for me, the main thing that happened was it became so normalized. You know, I was surrounded by, especially in my working environment, surrounded by people that were always drinking, or they weren't necessarily always drinking, but I was always surrounded by people drinking. So it just was normal, you know, that people were drinking at lunchtime and evening or in the afternoon. And as I went through university, I actually stayed in that industry of line of work. So it was so normal. And one of the bars that I worked in when I was at uni, you know, we closed at 1 and we would go out at 1 a.m. and that was the start of our night. And it's a super stressful industry to be in, you know, very full on and lots of partying, people partying and things like that.
Right.
So it becomes a release as well in that sort of environment.
I would imagine with if you're around it, it's there, everybody's drinking. It's just part of the culture. It's part of what you're doing. It's everywhere.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when my career in that industry sort of started developing, I started managing restaurants, which I absolutely loved, but it's super stressful and the hours are very long. And my coping mechanism and stress release was to have a drink. And right. actually that then became earlier and earlier, you know, in the day. And it became my sort of brain's reaction to being able to cope in those sorts of situations, stress and things like that.
So it just started to progress over time. Like you noticed it starting getting earlier and earlier in the day.
Yes.
Even though your day started, I guess after your day started at 1 a.m., but you're finding yourself drinking more and more.
Yeah, and it really sped up quickly as well. When I finished at uni, I then worked in the restaurant, so that was more of the day work. But, you know, it started creeping in, so we might have a couple of drinks after work, and then it slowly progressed into having a drink or two at the beginning of the evening shift if someone offered us one. That then progressed into maybe one at lunchtime. And then over time, it was suddenly quite plausible for someone to say, hey, should we just have a Bloody Mary this morning just to kickstart? You know, and that's where it then started, you know, getting really out of control.
And I think for a lot of people that struggle with alcohol, that's kind of the case. It kind of like kind of creeps up. I mean, I think for some other drugs, people are addicted pretty quickly, but alcohol, it always kind of seems to be that same kind of story where it starts to kind of intrude in your life in more and more ways. Like you said, oh, let's just start the day off with this. Why not?
Yeah. And in the restaurant industry and especially alcohol, it's so socially acceptable. So it's perceived as just doing something really fun, you know. Hey, do you want a drink? Yeah, sure, I'll join you from the other side
of
the
bar. Why not?
Yeah, this is all great fun. But the reality of it underneath the water, you know, it's getting very murky and very, very dangerous. So
So let's talk about the murkiness. When did you start to notice that the water was murky? And maybe this Bloody Mary at the beginning of the day is maybe not the best thing.
Yeah, it was when those Bloody Marys didn't become a fun option and they became a necessity to kickstart my brain and facing the day. I think that's when I realized, okay, this isn't too cool. But even at that point, because everyone else was doing it too, it was acceptable and normal. And when it was normalized, it became okay in my mind. I did start having sort of blackouts and things like that and not remembering evenings, and people would mention that. But again, it was a bit of a jokey kind of thing,
right.
You know, oh God, do you remember you were hammered last night? And sort of it would get laughed off. Those moments and all those sort of remarks got more serious over time, over the years. And I did actually get out of that industry because I realized it wasn't good for my health. But
right.
unfortunately, the alcohol and the addiction had stuck. So, you know.
So even though you moved out, you're still like, it's kind of following you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, it became something that led me as well, really. It was my coping mechanism. It was what I did, you know, and my brain was then completely connecting that short circuit to the perceived reward of alcohol. So, yeah, that's when the addiction was rife.
One thing that always fascinates me about our human behavior is how this shift starts to change. And then we start to notice like what was once like, all right. Now it starts to become problematic and we start to see it. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about like that process for you of kind of realizing like maybe this isn't all good.
It was a feeling. It was a sort of almost a feeling of a dull ache, a sinking feeling that I had inside. Okay. I knew there was something that was wrong with the way that I drank versus how other people drank. But I wasn't ready to face it. You know, I would watch in absolute awe as someone would just leave half a glass of wine at dinner when I was ready to crack open another bottle. You know, just I could not comprehend that other people.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah, you're wasting that good bottle of wine.
But in the throngs of it, you know, while it was sort of really speeding up, I probably didn't notice a lot of this stuff either. And it's only even now, you know, I started my recovery journey almost 4 years ago. And even now I'll start reflecting, going, when did it happen? You know, when was that moment?
Being able to see, it was something that was more gradual. And
it was very gradual, or maybe I was thinking it was gradual. You know, I think it was much more obvious on the outside, but I was trying to block it out because I wanted to carry on. I needed to carry on from a physically, I think my body needed it from at that point. So I didn't want to accept it for a long time.
Hello there, lovely souls. I want to invite you to join me for a special webinar where we'll explore the powerful emotion of shame. Now, shame can hold us back in the cycle of addiction, especially when it comes to sex and love addiction. So join Eric and I as we guide you in understanding how shame impacts your relationships and blocks your growth, and learn the ways to empower yourself to break free from its grip and become the person you aspire to be. This is your opportunity to make a profound transformation. So visit theaddictedmind.com/shame, take a leap of faith, and reserve your spot. You won't regret it. And I look forward to seeing you on the webinar.
So what was the point where you said, okay, I have to do something. I got to do something different.
So there were a few times where I had that feeling and I would think, right, pull myself together, you know, get in the shower, quit, you know, do a month. And I'd do a month and it would be a struggle, but I'd love it. You know, I'd feel great. My skin would be good. I'd be sleeping really well. I'd just be back on track with everything. I'd then get to the end of that month and think, cool, I don't have a problem. You know, people who have a problem can't stop for a month. So inevitably, I'd end up going to celebrate with some drinks at the pub. So that cycle did continue for a little while. There were some sort of rock bottoms along the way, and I really did try. And they got progressively worse. And the relapses then got progressively worse in turn. There was one turning point when my older brother actually flew over to come and see me and speak to me about it. And
wow,
it was then when I really realized that this was something that wasn't going unnoticed anyway, but this was really, you know, this is serious, Sophie. We've got to talk about this. And that's when I agreed to go to rehab.
Right. And that's a big decision, but it sounds like you had someone who reached out to you and maybe pointed out what you didn't want to see. And it sounds like a loving way.
Yeah, he did it in a beautiful way, a very compassionate way. And I must have been also ready as well, because, you know, there had been many attempts before that point and I hadn't quite connected with it. But I think at that point I was so exhausted mentally and physically, you know, my body really felt exhausted, that I just said, okay, let's do this. So I went to rehab in Thailand for about five or so weeks. And yeah, it was life-changing.
Wow. So you really got to see it all. And it's wonderful to hear that it's life-changing, that you actually got a second chance.
It was a huge, amazing shift in everything. You know, it allowed me a break from it all. Also, being in Thailand, it removed me from my environment, which I think was super important at that time, because environmentally there were cues just being catapulted at me from every direction. You know, I just wanted to drink. There were triggers everywhere. And also, so many bad memories of, oh God, that's where I fell over. Oh, that's where I hit a bottle. Oh, that's the person I made a fool out of myself across. So the shame was just unbelievably overwhelming. So stepping out of that situation, that environment, and being obviously in a safe space in a rehab, but also in a completely different culture, and everything was hugely, you know, beneficial to me.
Like, it helped you really see things differently, it sounds like.
Yes. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into the day-to-day at a rehab. So there was lots of you know, therapy and also discussion with other people there and for hearing other stories. And right. in time, that made it a lot more realistic that what I was going through was a problem and it needed to be sorted out.
So let's talk a little bit about that transformation and you moving through that process. And then we'll move into what you do now and how you help others. And I know that we had talked earlier at the beginning before we started the interview that there was a parable that you wanted to share. So I want to get there too. But let's talk a little bit about your own transformation, that process.
Yeah, great. So there were a lot of things involved and, you know, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, and physically getting fit. And I saw such huge benefits from those things that, and after rehab, I also started working with a recovery coach. It was a couple of years later. It was when I was going through a very wobbly time again. And I saw the benefits so much of how that person was helping and the things we were putting in place, you know, the goal setting, the shame lifting, all of those sorts of things. And that's what really inspired me to get into that line of work myself. I actually had an opportunity when I was in Indonesia almost 2 years ago now to be a sort of recovery companion for private clients who were in sort of a private one-to-one rehab space. And I loved this chance to help other people in a place that I'd been, you know, that real darkness, being able to be there, hold space for them and work on things that I knew had helped me, you know, yoga, just talking, lifting shame, goal setting, all of those things. It was a moment where I really felt, wow, I've found my calling in a way. You know, I've really found my sense of purpose to help others, but also to help my own recovery. So it was a sort of magical finding, really, for me.
Right. And this goes to your website, thewolfyoufeed.com. It goes to that because I can hear in your language about how you started to switch your focus to, you know, get moving through that shame, moving through all of those feelings that are difficult, where alcohol was the way in which you could mask it, get rid of it, change it, shift it in the moment. So let's start to go there because I know you wanted to share this and I'm excited to hear it.
So I'd decided and I'd done my training, my recovery coaching training and all of that sort of stuff. And I thought, I really need to think of a name and a sort of, you know, idea behind why I'm doing this, a sort of foundation stone. And I didn't really want to call my coaching company after my name because it's not really about me.
Right.
And I was so inspired by this parable. I'll read it to you actually, if you like, and we can talk
about it. Yes, I would love to hear it.
Okay, great. So I have it here. So an old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. "A fight is going on inside me," he said to the boy. "It is a terrible fight, and it is between two wolves. One is evil. He is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego." He continued, "The other is good. He is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. The same fight is going on inside you and in every other person too." The grandson thought about this for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf will win?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed." The one you feed. And to me, there was such a link to recovery and addiction. You know, when we continue, and this relates back to my personal experience, when I was feeding my bad wolf, the relapses would begin or the addiction just continued. And feeding the good wolf, you know, releasing that shame, giving ourselves compassion, love, having connection, all of those things that I mentioned from the parable, that's where our recovery really starts to strengthen and we're able to maintain it. So I thought it was such a relevant parable to have and include in the name.
I love that parable. I think it just, it goes right to the point and right to what we need to do. My question is, how did you start to learn to feed the right wolf, the positive wolf? How did you start to do that? Like, how did that start to happen in your life?
That's a great question, because I had a lot of self-hate, a lot of self-loathing. So those things did not come easily at all, at all in early recovery. There was a lot of self-doubt, low self-esteem, actually rock bottom self-esteem. And so it became something that I needed to do on a very, very small scale, doing esteemable things every day, as small as they might be. I spent a chunk of time in Bali after rehab and so on to really focus on my recovery. So I had the gift of time to really focus on these things. And actually it started as something very, very almost extreme, but basic. I had a timetable, an hourly timetable for each day, and broke the day down into things that I could do that were kind to others, things that helped me in my own physical health, my mental health, my emotional health, my spiritual health. And slowly over time, sorry.
No, that's okay. No, I was just going to say, I love that when you say that, like, you know, you took it, you broke it down and you put it into steps and you made it like actionable and doable, and that it just starts small. I love that you say that, because a lot of, I think there's like a mythology out there that somehow, and I guess sometimes it does happen. We do have some big changes and we just shift. But I think, you know, 99% of the time, it's exactly what you're talking about. It's that making a list and doing these things that are good.
Absolutely. And it had to start there, because everything else felt overwhelming. You know, to think of the bigger things that started being added in over time, you know, over months, over years, was too overwhelming. And I would just say, I just can't do it. So I'd end up not doing anything. So I thought, well, the best thing to do is do something tiny and celebrate that tiny thing. Because, I mean, you know, it's proven the more things that we can celebrate and look back on in our day and see as something, as an achievement, helps us with the bigger things.
Right. So. And that's like feeding the right wolf.
Exactly.
Feeding the positive wolf.
Yes.
Little pieces at a time.
Yeah, as small as they might be, you know, it might start off, and this is how it started off. It might start off with a shower and brushing my hair and having 5 minutes of sunshine. That's obviously now very much part of my day and I don't even think about it, but it was a necessary step to be able to get to the point now where I'm at, where I have a monthly goals list and I have a 6 monthly goals list that I review every few days and just check back in with myself. But it had to start with the granular stuff to get to this, because if I'd started by saying, here's the monthly list, I wouldn't have got any of it done, because right. It just would have been too much to deal with.
Just too overwhelming. One question I wanted to talk to you about that you had mentioned was just, and I think so many people, when they're struggling and they're struggling with change, is that self-loathing, that, like what you said, that darkness, that depression, and how we get kind of stuck there in that. And it just kind of feeds the desire for escape to anything, a behavior, a substance, whatever.
Yeah, it's a self-perpetuating place to be, really, because the bad wolf starts feeding itself, really, you know, and gets stronger and is doing push-ups. So it is a dangerous place, and it does require a huge amount of courage to try and pull oneself out of that place. We're very, very fortunate in the recovery community as a whole that there's so much support in so many different forms. So, you know, if the courage is there to just try and reach out and step out of that dark place, there will always be someone there to help, because the support is necessary, especially right. In those early stages. You know, trying to do this alone is a very, very, very challenging thing to do. So even if it's the support of a friend, or if it's someone from a sort of therapeutic or psychological background and, you know, that right. sort of thing. There will always be someone along the way because we need to walk this path together.
Absolutely. I think so often when we're in that darkness, we feel like we can't reach out to anybody. We have to do it alone by ourselves. All the shame takes over. And that place is such a great place for that dark wolf just to thrive in and just grow stronger. And it gets harder and harder to reach out, but you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, in my case anyway, it's not something that is an overnight thing. You know, okay, I'll do these five things today and then I'll be absolutely brilliant from tomorrow onwards. You know, it's a transition and we have to, in some ways, hold space for that bad wolf and accept that some of those things, like the shame, there's going to be residue for a little or a long time. But as we start feeding the good wolf, those things get smaller and get removed eventually.
So talk about that patience that you have to have as you make this shift, as you start to, I guess, feed that positive side. And I don't know if I should starve the negative side is the right way to say it. Cause like you said, it's still kind of a part of us, but nurture it, I guess. I don't know. That patience that takes part of that process. Cause like you said, it doesn't happen overnight.
Yeah, it doesn't. And it's really hard. You know, it's a challenging process, but it's not as hard as continuing in a state of addiction. And I think that, you know, as we feed that good wolf, parts of that wolf include self-compassion. So as we work through this huge spectrum of emotions during recovery, where both wolves are, you know, pretty strong, when we build up the strong wolf, the things like self-compassion do get stronger. So we're able to look at the other things in a slightly different way, and the perspective changes. There's a little bit more acceptance rather than the need or want to try and block them out. And when we accept them, it helps us move through them and move them away.
Right. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's I guess we're a little bit calmer when we start to move towards acceptance. We're not so, I guess, agitated to get out of it. Get out of that pain, that shame, whatever. We can sit with it a little bit more patiently and give it some compassion.
Absolutely. And the practical side of doing all this work is the added benefits from doing that practical stuff. So, for example, journaling might tick off something from a list perspective and an achievement perspective, but there's actually also the release that one gets emotionally and mentally from the journaling as well. So there are huge benefits from adding all of these things into that, you know, new routine that then becomes the thriving routine that helps us in our recovery.
So let's talk a little bit, like if you saw someone who was out there struggling and you were going to create this thriving routine for them, what might be some of the things you would start to put in it? So, you know, someone out there listening, they can really kind of go, maybe I can do that. Maybe I can do that.
So it's certainly something that's very different for each person and has to be tailored to a lifestyle so that it's achievable.
Right.
Because these things have to be realistic. And, you know, saying I'm going to go for a walk every day when it takes 20 minutes to get to somewhere to walk is, right. you know, is not going to be achievable. So it always has to be tailored to the lifestyle of the individual. And the biggest thing that I always encourage people to do is really start small, because everything can always be added to. Like we were saying earlier, you know, small, start small and then grow on it. And also not to be hard on oneself if we fall off once here or there. As long as we get back on, that habit will continue forming and strengthening. So start small. Build on it. Don't be worried if you fall off here, there, or wherever. Make it easy. Make it irresistible, actually. You know, make it something that's really appealing to you as well.
Right.
And something that's actually quite exciting.
What might be a good example of something really small? Because I think a lot of times what I found for myself is I think something's oh yeah, that's totally doable. I tend to overestimate. Yeah, that's totally doable. And then really resonate, I have to keep it like taking it back. No, no, no. It has to be really, really small. So what might be an example of one of those small things someone might do just in the beginning of their day if they're starting this journey?
So one thing could be a gratitude list of just five things. And this is where, this is a great example actually of building on something. So it can start off as five things that you think of in your own mind as you're lying in bed. That's it, every day. And that's something that can then build. And after a week, you start saying, these are my five things, and these are why I'm grateful for them. So you're adding something little onto them. The next stage of that might be to write them down in a journal, and you've got them, you know, that's the next stage. And then the next stage after that would be to share them with someone else. So that's almost like a four weekly, you know, an example of how something can progress over 4 weeks.
I think that's such a great example because it really shows how you just have to start really small. Because sometimes I think if we're struggling with depression or anxiety or addiction, we're so overwhelmed that it's hard to fit these little positive things in that can kind of start to feed the positive side of ourselves, feed that positive wolf. And I think that's just, it's a good example because it kind of shows you how you can build it, but you have to have that consistency, and slowly over time, you're going to begin to feel better. You're going to begin to make those changes.
Absolutely. And the way that our brains are usually wired is to seek things, you know, routines, habits that give us a instant gratification. And we don't usually work hard for the ones that give us a long-term gratification until we start learning about the benefits. So if we can do something like a quick fight, something that takes 1 minute in the morning that can then build into something else, it's going to be much more resistible and have that instant gratification that our brains are actually looking for in early recovery because we're so used to getting it from alcohol or another substance. You know, I'm going through this quick fix, you know, so those quick fixes need to be still in place, but in healthier ways.
Right. Slowly start to find ways to do it, to get that, I guess, if you want to call it soothing or whatever, to be able to change it. Yeah. And a lot of times alcohol, drugs, behaviors, whatever it is, work fast. They work
absolutely
quick.
Yes, really quick.
Destructive, but quick.
Yeah. And often we find ourselves with this huge void of how to get these instant fixes, which is where, you know, this sort of transference of addiction can start happening in early recovery, where we start getting hooked to our phones or social media or things like that, because the instant gratification is so prevalent in those things. So if we can attune that to something like a gratitude practice that takes so little time, we can start seeing the benefits of the healthy ways to work on our recovery.
And it's kind of like, as you do that, it slowly starts to build. You just have to believe that it's going to build. And then, like you said earlier, reach out, get that support to help you through it. You don't have to do this alone. You don't have to be alone. There are people out there like you that want to help and can help.
Absolutely. Yeah. There are so many people who love to help others. You know, we've been in these incredibly dark places ourselves and been hauled out of those holes, those shame caves. And, you know, we see the value in how much it helps to have someone walk with us on that journey. So it's giving back, you know, it's really seeing how someone could benefit from that as well.
Right. And it's so hard. You know, I think back of my own dark times in my life. And when I take a step back, I can see that there were people around me who reached in to pull me up. I may not have been able to recognize it at that time or see it in that way, but like your brother who, you know, he kind of reached into that dark space and pulled you out. Other people out there can get that too, that there are people out there. Take the hand that's reaching in.
Absolutely. And that's also why I love the coaching space, because it's a really empowering way for people to find what is actually already inside themselves that they might not see yet because of the low self-esteem. So the coaching is really an opportunity to help someone find those things. It's not guidance and advice and right. all of those. I mean, it's guidance. It's not advice. It's not telling someone what to do. It's gently holding space for someone, safe space, so that they can grow and be empowered to grow and in turn strengthen that good wolf.
Right. And with all of that compassion as a part of it.
Huge, huge. Yes.
Awesome. Thank you, Sophie, so much for coming on to The Addicted Mind. My favorite question, someone out there, maybe they're struggling, they know a loved one is struggling. What would you want to say to them if you could say one thing?
Have the courage to take the first step, however small that might be for you. It might be looking in the mirror and telling yourself that you need to get help, or it might be making a phone call. It's different for us all, but have the courage to make that first step and everything else will fall in place.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Where can people find you? How can they get a hold of you? How can they connect with you?
So people can find me on my website, thewolfyfeed.com. I'm also on Instagram, the_wolfyfeed. So those are the two best places.
Awesome. And once again, I will put all those in the show notes at theaddictedmind.com. Thank you, Sophie, so much for coming on, sharing your wisdom and your courage and all of that.
Thanks so much for having me, Duane. I've absolutely loved it and really enjoyed our conversation.
All right, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Addicted Mind podcast. As usual, all the show notes will be at theaddictedmind.com. And if you're enjoying the Addicted Mind podcast, please share it with a friend or write us a review in iTunes. That really does help people find the podcast. And I really appreciate it. And if you'd like to continue the conversation online, think about joining our Facebook group. Just go to Facebook, type in the Addicted Mind podcast, click join, and continue the conversation online. All right, everyone, have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care, be safe, and I will talk to you on the next episode.
It's easy to blame ourselves for our struggles with alcohol. We see people around us being able to control their drinking without any consequences, yet no matter what we try, we can't seem to figure it out for ourselves. My name is Jillian Teets, and I am the host of the Sober Powered podcast, where I use my biochemistry background to explain the latest research in addiction and help you understand both why you drink the way you do and how to develop the skills and mindset you need to find freedom from alcohol. I discuss topics like why we think about our drinking 24/7, why we have no off switch, and why we crave alcohol. If you're struggling with your drinking or you know someone who is, then I hope that you will check out the Sober Powered podcast. New episodes every Friday. See you there.